virtual meetups. And with what's going on, we've actually become really innovative and decided to bring you a special series, which is called the Mega C-Suite Series. So last episode, we had Dan Lawman, who joined us actually from the US, and he's an ex-NSA and the CISO for the state of Michigan. And it was incredible hearing his stories, and you can catch up on it. Actually, it's on the recording as well on YouTube. It's on Cyber Risk Meetup channel. But today, I'm really, really excited to have our second CSZ guest for today. We have Paula Kensington, and all of you can see her on the screen. So that's Paula. And before I give her a quick introduction, I'm just going to quickly welcome the rest of our Cyber Risk Meetup members who are also joining us here from Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, Singapore, and Tokyo. And we also have quite a lot of new friends joining in from New Zealand, Malaysia, India, Shanghai, Spain, Portugal as well. So that's really incredible. Welcome all of you. All right. So really happy to have Paula here with us, and she will be sharing with us a number of different topics across about like the lens of cybersecurity, but through the CFO's perspective, which is really fascinating. So Paula is someone who is so well recognized in the CFO circles. She was awarded the CFO of the year back in 2013 in Thomson Reuters Tax and Accounting Excellence Awards. She has driven huge business turnaround projects in her roles as a CFO and a COO in ASX technology companies, including large UK and internationally complex service businesses. Now, Paula was also on two audit and risk committees, as well as she was on the Global Council Board of the ACCA. So similar to what we have done here in terms of building up the Cyber Risk Meetup community, Paula has also built global communities, which I'll get her to share a bit more shortly. She is currently actually running her own business, which is called like the PK Advisory, CFO Conversations, and she is also the CEO of the LBD Group. So Paula, over to you. Really just want to hear more about your story of how you land up being a CFO in today's modern world. And maybe if you can share with the audience, what are the expectations of a CFOs? You know, what are they being measured by?
Oh, thank you, Shemaine. And hi to everybody in the online virtual cybersecurity world that we're now living in. Thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here and share some of my insights and journeys. And as you said, it's absolutely key to really understand how different C-suite people think differently. And so whilst there's a natural alignment sometimes with a finance executive and cyber and technology executives, you know, we don't all have the same personality traits. So how did I start off by my CFO journey? Well, I left school at 16 and I didn't want to be an accountant. My father's an accountant. My brother, older brother's an accountant. The last thing I wanted to do was be an accountant. I actually wanted to go into fashion design because I thought accounting was so boring. But I realized then at the age of 21 that I needed to be financially independent. It was something that was really important for me. And what came with that was the realization that I needed a professional qualification to be able to get myself financially independent. So I went back to school, if you like, whilst I was working and did my ACCA, my accounting qualification, whilst I was working. So I feel like I did it pretty much the tough way, but I feel like I've done my whole life the tough way. Nothing's been gifted to me, handed to me on a silver platter or anything like that. I've worked damn hard to get where I've got to. And I guess
and
the CFO
was a lot. Wow, very impressive.
Well, the CFO world opened up to me probably about 12 years ago around, you know, the opportunity. They call it Australia the land of opportunity, and it certainly is. And I was really fortunate to be given an opportunity to get my first CFO role in a business that its wheels fell off. It was the GFC that time, so another crisis, but a different one. And the bank company had hit a banking covenant. The chairman left, the CEO left, the CFO left. Like, basically, it was like a ghost town, and they asked, the new CEO came in, asked me if I'd step into the CFO role, which was a huge risk at the time because the business was on its knees. So it was like, well, why not? We've got nothing to lose. The business has got nothing to lose, and I've got nothing to lose. And so I stepped into that role, and as you say, the rest is history.
Oh, that's a really tough time actually to take up that role. What would you say, you know, if you look back at your history, your career history, what is the key, a key challenge that you feel that you have had to face, but you have learned how to overcome?
Well, the biggest challenge I think actually is in our own minds. And I talk a lot about this. I mentor a lot of CFOs and a lot of people that are aspiring CFOs. And I do believe that a lot of our obstacles are actually mindset. Whether we believe we can do it, I think is a real hurdle for some people that can never get over the fact that actually they are good enough, that they are willing to take that risk. And I think I've always taken a risk in my life. So, you know, what's the, I say to people, the litmus test is what's the worst thing that can happen if this doesn't go well. It means it's learning for me. If it doesn't go well, maybe I have to move back to a different role. Maybe I have to move on to a different business. You know, if you're not willing to take a chance, then there's little reward in that.
Yes, and that's a great way to actually grow yourself as well when you have a different mindset. So that's really good, Paula. So what can you share with us a bit about how did that group started, and also what are the common topics that
Yeah, sure. So I started that group, as I say, back in 2018, and I chose five CFOs in my network that I knew reasonably well, and I asked them to come and have a conversation with me about certain challenges. And now we've done 55 episodes, and they're only 5 minutes. So the reasoning behind that was to make sure that I gave people a platform to come and listen to what it's like to be a CFO. You know, if you want to be a CFO or you want to be a CFO in a bigger organization, well, it's often really powerful to listen to how they think and what they talk about. And it gives you some insights into the world of what a CFO is like. So some of the topics that we talk about, unsurprisingly, is disruption. How do we disrupt our business world before we get disrupted? And so that's quite timely at the moment because we're all being hugely disrupted in our business worlds. But then thinking about transformation, and I've seen some great social posts on across all the platforms at the moment talking about who's driving your digital transformation. Is it the CEO? Is it the CTO? Is it the CEO? Or is it COVID-19? And you know, I mean, it's funny in a way. It's ironic that a trauma, a crisis event, is driving business transformation, and you know, and not the CFO or the CTO. So. You know, I think sometimes what is actually happening in the world actually is a good thing for business. It means that we're forced to do things differently. So disruption, transformation, and the role of CFO. You know, I've been a CFO for 12, 13 years. The role has changed in that time and continues to change. And so together as CFOs, we explore what does that mean. So we think about, you know, the role of leadership. It's hugely important for CFOs, and probably wasn't 10 years ago. But now, if the CFO is going to drive transformation and drive us through this business and through this challenging time, we've got to have good leadership behaviors and skills. And not, trust me, not all CFOs do.
I was going to say, just Shemaine will come back on shortly, but to continue with that line, and as you say, when we talk about from a cyber perspective, so whether you're a chief information security officer in this time, who would you be best aligning yourself to potentially? Because obviously the CEO is there taking the risk and the CFO is pulling them back to make sure that risk management is realistic. At a time of crisis like this, where would you imagine both the CIO and the CISO, where would their focus be? Because obviously this is a time where they're going to have to take risk, and that the CFO is going to be observing a lot of risk financially, but unless that business transitions quickly, it's going to be difficult for them, right?
Yeah, that totally. And I think the answer is going to depend. It's going to depend very much on the skill set that you have in your organization as CFO. If you've got a strong CFO who seems to be driving the way through this crisis, I would definitely be aligning myself to the CFO. If you've got a CFO that seems to be more of a sort of steward, backward-looking type, you know, CFO that doesn't seem to be very motivating and inspiring, I would be aligning myself perhaps more with the CEO, because, you know, the CFO, this role isn't for everybody. There's a lot of CFOs there that shouldn't be in that role. They should be more the financial controller than the CFO. In yep. my mind, the CFO is the driver, the captain of the ship. The CEO can be often that, you know, gregarious, outward, trying to take risks, trying to find the new places to get business. And the CFO needs to be driving the change. And they want the CFO, the CTO, the CSIRO, you know, whatever, the chief of cyber, they want them to be in their camp. They need to be aligned, if not already reporting to them, maybe.
I think that's a fair point you've raised. What would be your definition of the difference between a financial controller and a CFO? Obviously, it's impacted by the size of the company, but, you know, we deal a lot more with sort of financial controllers rather than maybe that CFO role.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, it's generic, but I think big picture, financial controllers think transactions. That to me is the differentiation between the two. I've had a lot of really solid financial controllers working for me. They're in the detail, or if they're not in the detail, they're sort of managing the numbers. The CFO isn't managing the numbers. The CFO is managing the risk over the business and the future of the business. You know, if I think about my CFO roles, I don't add up the numbers. That's not, I'm the communicator. I'm the voice from outside in and inside out.
Yeah. Shemaine, you're back. Welcome.
Sorry about that. Thanks everyone for being so patient. But yeah, you can hear me. So now I was just wondering, because as a, you know, like with the world changing, right, and everything is, we're looking at digital transformation and our businesses are evolving as well. So naturally, the CEO's challenge is also quite different. And like they say, the modern day CFO these days, it's no longer about, you know, efficiency. Well, it's more about how effective a CFO is, right? And it's about how are you able to meet the business needs as compared to, you know, saving costs. And it's a bit of a different mindset. So just wondering how, as a CFO, you have had to change the language that you use to articulate your message when you're talking to the CEO, when you're talking to the board. If you can give us some tips about that, that'd be good.
Yeah. So the first move from the, once you first make that move away from the numbers and the transactions and the detail, that is the hardest move, because you have to leave everything that you know behind. Everything that's your safe place, you have to leave behind. You have to get someone else to do the numbers, to do the do. You've got to then become the person that has got the inspiration and the motivation and you know, the wherewithal to take the business to the next step. You've got to be aligned with the CEO if they're great leaders. You know, I've been, unfortunately, working with a number of not so great CEOs versus the great ones. I can count the great ones on one hand. I can count the not so great ones on two hands. And this is not a surprise for many people. They say the same things. But, you know, I think the language is important. The language is important externally and internally. So it starts with actually having belief in yourself. And this is not for everybody. So I think you need to be really clear about, if you're a CFO that loves the transactions and the detail and all of the adding up the numbers and the modeling and all of that, you're not the CFO that's out there driving strategy and being the communicator and being the storyteller with the numbers. So, you know, hold up a mirror to yourself. This crisis will do two things. Hold up the mirror to have a look to see who you are, or magnify the problem that is out there. So if you're that internal person that loves that introspection, introspective kind of work, then that's not, you're not being the CFO that's needed of today or the future. So the language, I think the language just kind of comes. It's kind of, for me, it's always been there. And maybe I've just sort of honed it in the last 8 years, which was really the time from moving away from the numbers perspective and actually becoming the bigger picture player. You know, I think it looks for creativity in their thinking. It looks for, you know, that design thinking, not knowing the answers. I think it's really important to embrace the unknowing. And again, financial controllers, they just don't get that world. They're kind of, yeah, 2 and 2 is 4. I can cope with that. You know, as a strategic thinker, 2 and 2 could be 22 and not 4.
I think it raised a lot of good insights, and I see a lot of similarities and parallels, even like with the CISOs that I work with. It's about changing your language as well. And it's not just focusing on the technical jargons or, you know, security issues at a really technical level, but being able to bring that up to the next level where you bring in storytelling as well. So that's relatable to the CEO, that's relatable to the board. So just wondering, like, in terms of your interaction then with the other security leaders, when you're speaking to, whether is it the CISOs or head of security, what's your observation in terms of how they are portraying themselves, what kind of language they are using, and, you know, maybe do you think that there's room, what sort of areas they can improve on?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think CFOs and CTOs or cybersecurity people, they can be very similar. Okay, so there's a lot of similarities in terms of logical left brain kind of thinking. And so if I was a CTO or, you know, a security officer of any description, I would try and align myself with the CFO because there's a lot of natural ground there. People like order, process, numbers, you know, and technical, we're very logically thinking people. But that's not to say that you can't assume all the CFOs are this certain type of personality. So getting behind our roles as executives and leaders is really important. So the way to engage with a CFO, I would suggest, is that you get to understand what some of the drivers are behind the facade of being a CFO. So get to understand the person. At the end of the day, this is what we're doing now. This is what COVID-19 has forced us to do, is to talk to people, understand what actually makes them tick. I've heard so many stories about CEOs that have their children, you know, burst into the Zoom calls. Some other CEO from a huge global bank, financial services provider, introduced in the town hall to his mother-in-law, who's 86. So this authenticity, this relationship building is so important to people, especially these sort of, you know, I call them pointy-headed type technical people. You need to kind of get behind that. And if I think about the conversations I've had with CTOs, I've really enjoyed the what makes you tick conversation. So what, you know, what is it that you do outside of your tech and your, you know, IT world? Like, let's take the pointy hats off. Let's actually just go, you know what, I've got 2 dogs. I love going for walks on the weekend with my puppies. You know, what is it that you love doing? Don't assume that, you know, all the personality types are the same in your interactions with each other. It's important to understand your stakeholders. So whenever you're speaking, whenever you're presenting, whether you're presenting in the office of a CFO or whether you're presenting at a boardroom or you're presenting on stage and you've got an audience of CFOs or whatever the circumstance, always think about your audience first, not you. They're the ones that are listening to you. You've got to speak in the language that they understand, and you've got to be, so what, who cares?
Yeah, I really love that. And that's so true, because at the end of the day, it's about the human connection and the human relationship as well. And, you know, sometimes with things happening so quickly, people can lose sight of that, but it's about that connection. So yeah. Really, really good that you shared that, Paula. I noticed there's also quite a few questions that people have been asking. So just conscious of time, what I'll do is we'll go through, I don't know, can you see some of the questions, Paula?
Yeah, let me have a look. No, I can't see any of the questions for some reason.
Right, okay. So there's one that came in from Ross, and he was asking about... I'll just go straight first into, I think Prajesh is asking about like how many organizations are embarking on transformation and journeys and to, you know, to replace their business and to move that into digital. So do you see that it's important for them to understand about cybersecurity like for them to possess a good understanding of the change, and what's your view about the awareness of the board when it comes to understanding the risk of cybersecurity at this stage? Is enough done, in terms of to educate?
So I can talk to that point from two aspects. So from my corporate CFO aspect, where we've been talking about cybersecurity for probably about 8 years. And you know, the conversation first came up with the insurers about what are we doing about cybersecurity, and that was the first time that we'd really kind of heard about it. So it was driven by the outside in. But I think now there's obviously now it forms part of the risk register. So there's a lot more conversation from a corporate perspective. They've been doing it for about 8 to 10 years. From a small business ownership perspective, people have only started thinking about cybersecurity probably in the last 12 months. But they're very agile in terms of having to deal with it, because I've had so many conversations in the last 6 months about how invoices have been hacked, how they've been paying the wrong bank accounts, any amount from $10,000 to $120,000. And these are small businesses. They're not making $1 million. These are small business, and they're feeling this is coming out of their pocket. So the appetite for change in some ways is even stronger in small business, because it's their money. Okay, maybe the banks are stepping in and insuring it again if that happens, but it feels like you're a lot closer to it in small business than you are in corporate business, because you know, you tend to have bigger insurance policies. It tends to be, well, it's not our money, it's the shareholders' money. There is definitely two schools of thought that I see.
Yeah, that's true, and that's good. And just quickly, I'm trying to get through as many questions as I can. So quite a lot of feedback coming in, and they're saying they really appreciate your insights, by the way, Paula. And this felt is really refreshing to hear what you have shared. A size over here from Singapore, Gee, is asking, like, what are your thoughts about having a COO, and maybe what are some of the benchmarks that a CFO can use as a guidance for the cybersecurity budget?
Ooh, some of the benchmarks. Well, I guess it would be good to see how effective we're being, because often this is like a silent piece of work. Like there could all be all of this activity going on and we don't see any of the positives from it, because we're not seeing how many incidents did we miss, or how many near misses were there? How many times have we now stopped opening phishing emails because of all the great work that's going on with teaching people what not to open. So I think some measure there about how successful we've been in actually protecting the firm, I think is important, because otherwise it just goes completely unnoticed. It's like having an insurance policy and never having to cash it in. You know, it's like you spend a lot of money, but you don't know how much money it would have cost you. So maybe demonstrating the number of near misses, or you know, no misses, I don't know what the language is, but you know, what have we saved ourselves from? What are our peer companies suffering that we're not, because we've got stronger capability around it?
Yeah, and that's an ongoing conversation as well, because everyone's trying to understand how they can demonstrate the return of value, and it's something that still, you know, debatable, and like there are lots of different frameworks that have come into the picture these days to help people articulate risk, and you know, what's the return on investment, return on value, and things like that.
And so one thing I would I've been talking, and again changing language, so I now talk about return on objectives. So if the objective of this is to be sustainable and have a future, then that $500,000, that $1 million that you spent on cybersecurity risk management is a return on objective, and it might not necessarily have a value that says I just saved my company $10 million, you know. So it's language, and I think this COVID is going to change the language of sustainable, profitable, ongoing business.
That's really, really great. I guess the last question that we have from the audience would be, you know, you've shared quite a lot of good tips about, you know, your own perspective, your language and things like that as well. But how do the other CSX help CFOs who might not have the same perspective as you and help them through the journey as well.
Yeah, get them to come and listen to CFO conversations. If you've got CFOs that aren't leaders, I would suggest other C-suite executives need to embrace a culture of growth mindset, of coaching, of learning and development. Mm-hmm. And if you all jump in as an executive suite, then you're not just pointing out to the one person that says, you know, you've got seriously lacking these skills. Get someone, a professional that's out there that helps people hold a mirror up to themselves to see what skills they've got or what skills they could work on. It's not easy to tell someone that they've not got a lot of EQ or, you know, that they're not being the inspiration to their finance team or to anybody else in the organization. But I think, you know, the trigger event is here. This is my language now. Like, go underneath the umbrella of COVID and say, look, you know, we know that we all have to change. This is a unprecedented. We have to do things that we've never done before in order to get a sustainable outcome on the other side. So why don't we all do this rather than, you know, pointing the finger that says you're not really up to scratch, you're not the best leader of this business. You know, so try and make it not about individuals, trying to make it about the culture or a team participation would be my advice. But definitely to look at CFO conversations. It's free. Mm. All it is a fortnightly conversation about what it's like to be a CFO. And you know, one of the other reasons why I did it is so that I can help people in a safe environment, because it's only me, the camera and everybody, but it's only me in the room. Like, just talk about stuff that we know. This is not rocket science.
Yep. And that's the beauty of it. I did see quite a few of your videos as well, where you're having, it's on YouTube, where you're having conversations with different CFOs. And it's really helpful, because at the end of the day, as we build this community and ecosystem, we get to grow together when we are learning from each other. And when you talk about culture, I think that's excellent, because it starts with yourself, right? It starts with that one person, and then we help to take other people on the journey along with us. So that's amazing. I wish we can go on, because you have a lot to share, and I know the audience is so hungry. Maybe we have to do this another time. But just really wanted to thank you. Like, you've shared a lot within the 30 minutes. I know we've gone on a little bit more, a couple of minutes. If the rest of us can just stay on for about maybe two more minutes before I wrap up, I think that would be great. So you know, follow Paula on CFO conversations, check her on LinkedIn, because that's a lot of good work she's doing. And I think it's great that, you know, from a cybersecurity leader perspective, it's really about broadening your perspective and, you know, going out of your own world, but taking the time to understand what the other CSX are facing, what's their perspective, what's their mindset, and that's the beauty of it. So thank you very much, Paula, for your time. Really appreciate this. Everyone is actually really thankful as well. I see the comments coming in. I will update you more about their feedback. So that's all we have for today. We have episode 3 after the Easter break. So that will be on the 22nd of April. And our guest would be a CRO. And we will be deep diving into his perspective from the lens of a chief risk officer. So join us for that. And if you have missed the previous episodes, you can catch up. We have the recordings up. Today's episode will be up as well on Cyber Risk Meetup YouTube channel. So you can have a look at that. And all this wouldn't be possible without all our supporters and partners. So just a shout out to Mimecast for being our annual platinum sponsor. They do have a 10-second video that I am just going to share with you. They run actually awareness programs as well. So this is part of.
All right. It's a big house. I thought we could share it. Ah!
Alright, so thank you for your patience again, and a huge shout out to our community partners, My Security Marketplace. You saw Chris Kapich earlier, who's helping me out behind the scenes. He runs a huge, amazing platform where it is so rich in terms of the materials that they have, and a lot of podcasts events, newsletters, and articles about current cyber affairs. So feel free to check them out. And also a shout out to my company, PrivaSec. We do a lot of work with GRC and Tech Assurance. So we are quite busy helping organizations with their working from home security services at the moment. So if any questions, you can also reach out to me. And with that, we have come to the end of episode 2. So thank you everyone for all your patience, for tuning in, and I will see you on the 22nd of April. Thank you once again, Paula, and take care, guys, everyone.